Do you even remember where we are in terms of our preaching? Because we have different series and different people speaking on different topics. Do you remember where we were? That's right, we're still in the book of Acts. So we're going to try to pick up the speed a little bit. And this is probably one of my favorite books in the whole Bible. But we come to chapter 12, and I'm just going to have you read three verses. Let's do this together in one voice. Go ahead and start. I cannot really see it from here. Go ahead and 1, 2, 3.
It was about this time that Peter and Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. When he saw the rest of them had approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the festival of the unleavened bread.
Now, if you've been around for a long time, I bet you've never heard a sermon on a passage, this passage that we just read. How many of you actually heard a sermon on this particular story? Nobody, right? It's a really strange passage. What I really want to focus on is verse 2. If you can just leave that second verse there. You know, we're going through this entire story of the book of Acts in God's perspective. You know, we talked about how this book is really not about the Acts of the Apostles. It is actually about the Acts of the risen Lord Christ. And God is doing His work, continuing to do His work through the Holy Spirit. And this is actually the second record of Christian martyrs. Remember, we looked at it earlier in the beginning of the book. There is a person who actually died for his faith. Who was the first one to die? Stephen. So Stephen was the first one to be killed for believing in Jesus and being part of the church. And here, the second person dies, and his name is James. Now, it's very easy to miss when you read through the book of Acts, especially when you come to this part. You know, we usually kind of skim over the first three verses that we just read. There's a profound lesson that is actually given in this story, and I think this is one of those stories that literally changed my view of who God is. I wrestle with it, and there's a season in my life where I really ask the Lord, what is this about? What are you really trying to teach us, teach me? You know, there are actually quite strange things that are happening in this entire chapter. It's actually quite bizarre. Now, first thing that I want to point out is that in verse 2, it talks about how James was killed for his faith. But pay attention to how short it is. This is probably one of the shortest verses. It says James was killed. Who was this James? The brother of John. So the first question is, why so short about his death? And then the second question that I want to really raise up is, why didn't God do anything about his death? Why didn't he save him? Do you know who James was? Besides being the brother of John, do you know who this James was? He was one of the apostles, but not only any apostle, he was one of the three, the inner circle. Remember the three that were closest to Jesus? Peter, John, James. This is one of those three that Jesus loved. And how come Jesus did not save him? The third question that I want to raise is that, you know, there's this really interesting description. James is mentioned in this book. Everybody probably knew as one of the three. But here, the title of this, I guess, who he was, his identity was the brother of James. Why? The brother of John. Why is he introduced as the brother of John? Now, if you look at these three questions carefully, God is actually teaching us something very, very important for our Christian faith. In fact, you may not like what you hear today. This isn't my disclaimer. You know, when I prepare a message, sometimes I know that whether this is going to be something that people will love to hear. This is one of those messages that you may find it really difficult to embrace or even take away. We're going to look at this, but this really will change. If you really pay attention and if you ask the Lord to really speak to you, I think it'll change the way you think about your Christian faith. Now, I'm going to quickly go through these three questions that I raised. Why so short? You know, when you go back to the beginning of the book, it talks about the death of Stephen. Do you remember? Almost two chapters were given. Luke records about Stephen's life, what kind of man he was, and then he writes two chapters about Stephen, the very first martyr. And then, here, it's not even half a sentence. Stephen was a deacon. Now, as I said, Stephen was not even an eyewitness. He was not even an apostle. He did not even spend time with Jesus when he was alive. Stephen probably was one of those distant disciples. And yet here, James dies, and there's really, literally no description of who this man was. There's no tribute. There's no honor given to James. Do you find that strange? What is happening here? For good reason, Herod actually chose his first sacrificial lamb to appease the Jewish religious leaders. So this was Herod's choice, and he actually finds James, because he was one of the three, and then he chooses to kill him just to satisfy the Jewish religious leaders. And there it is. Eight words given to his death. Eight words. James was killed, the brother of John. Are those eight words or more? I think there are about eight words. He killed James, John's brother, with the sword. No further description about his life. No sermons given. It doesn't tell us what happened afterwards. You know, most funerals that I attend, there's always a difference between a Christian funeral and funeral of non-believers. One of the hardest funerals that I had to do was a person who was never a believer, and I actually never knew the person, but somebody contacted our church, and they were just desperate. So the family asked me if I could do a funeral for them. And so when I went to meet with the family, you know, one of the things that they wanted me to do was to really honor this man's life. He told me the whole life story. And he asked me in my sermon or in my sharing that if I could really celebrate and honor his life. And then they asked me if I could just assure his eternal destiny. And I asked them, this is not a believing family. And yet, they asked me to honor this person. It was really hard for me to do, and I had to be really honest with them, and I ended up preaching the gospel with the family. But, you know, even in non-believing people, non-Christian people, they have this desire to celebrate and honor someone's life when they pass from this life to the next. Here, I find it absolutely bizarre and strange that the Bible would actually not give any further description about what kind of man James was. And his death was almost recorded as like just a daily event. What is God really teaching us? What is this passage really teaching us? This is a part that you may find it really difficult to embrace, but it's actually teaching us how small, how insignificant our bodily death is for Christians. To men, death is the ultimate reality, right? Everybody's afraid of dying. I'm afraid of death. When I think about losing my loved ones or even in my own life, it scares me to death when I think about death, right? We're all scared, but in God's perspective, in the light of eternity, our bodily death is a small thing. It's an insignificant thing. That's the only way to explain the shortness or the brevity of this passage. When death is viewed from the heights of eternity, it is a small thing. That's why Paul says, oh, where is your sting? Oh, death, where is your sting? Where is your victory grave? So that's what God is teaching us. It's the first reality that he's teaching us. You know that Jesus never actually made any special promise of security or protection for his followers. You may find this really shocking. But just because we're Christians, we're not immune to the kinds of trials or sufferings or even hardships that we're going to experience. Instead, Jesus always warned his followers. He said, I send you like sheep among wolves. If you have difficulty believing this, according to tradition, all 12 of the apostles, you know that they were all martyred. They all died. Not one of them survived, except maybe the Apostle John, the brother of James. James is the only one out of all 12. He's the only one who's even actually given a line or credit for dying. The rest of them, their names, their acts, their death are not even mentioned. So that's the first point. In God's perspective, in the scheme of the distant future that God holds for us, our bodily suffering and death is just actually a small thing. Number two, gets a little bit more difficult. How come Jesus did not save you? Why no miracle? We all believe in the power of prayer, right? Right? We talked about it last Sunday, right? We all believe in the power of prayer. We believe in the power of healing. We believe in God's promise. But here, it seems like God really did not answer, or God did not save James. You know what's really interesting is that when you read chapter 12, it's not just this story. Luke is very, very intentional in how he puts together the story. So the first three verses talks about the death of James. And then you know what comes afterwards? Starting from verse 6. Anybody remember what comes in the second half of the chapter 12? Comes this incredible miracle of Peter being rescued. If you went to Sunday school, you learn about these stories, right? Now, Herod was very, very intentional. He not only killed James, but he also wanted to make sure that the church understands. He wanted to put living fear in the first generation of the believers. So he found Peter and he locked him up. He's in prison now. And do you know what happened to him? Do you remember the story? In the middle of the night, angel comes and he wakes Peter up. And the chains literally fall off his hands. And then the guards are literally blinded. They cannot see anything. And the angel leads him out of the prison. And miraculously rescues him. It says that actually the prison doors, the cell doors, unlocked by itself. Is that a miracle or what? Would you like to experience a miracle like that? So my question is this. How come Peter was rescued in such a miraculous fashion and James was killed? How would you explain that? How come God did not stop the sword of this execution or miraculously release James from the prison cell? And I don't think it's coincidence, or I think Luke is actually very intentionally putting these two stories together. Some people will say that if you actually read on in chapter 12, the reason why Peter was rescued miraculously was because the believers, the disciples were gathered together, and what were they doing? It says that they were praying. Praying for what? Praying for the release of their brethren. How many of you really believe that James was killed because people did not pray for him, but Peter was rescued because people prayed? I've heard that argument before. How many of you honestly believe that that was the reason? I'm glad no hand is going up right now. If that's what you believe, that's religion. That's superstition. That's not the kind of God that we believe. Was Peter more loved? Do you think Jesus loved Peter more than James? You know, we sometimes put the order in the way Jesus loved his disciples. Peter always comes first, or John, Peter. James was probably the last of the three. Is that why? Do you think Jesus loved Peter more? What do you make of all this? Here's a truth that you and I really need to face and embrace. We cannot measure the love of God with what happens in this life. Just because you are struck with cancer doesn't mean that God does not love you. Just because some unfortunate thing happened, or just because God took away someone that you love dearly too soon, you cannot conclude that God does not love you more or less because of what happens in this life. You know that our welfare or our suffering is really not an indication of the measure of God's love for us. The Bible is actually very clear about that. In today's world, God's favor is often measured by our health, our wealth, our prosperity, whether we get that job that we want or the promotion that we want. We've been trained, we've been conditioned to think like that and practice our faith in that way. But that's not the story that we read in the book of Acts. We cannot think like that. Why was Peter spared in this story and not James? Because God was not done with Peter. His purpose for Peter was not done. His job was not done. It was not an accident that James died and Peter lived. And it's not even because of the prayers of the disciples. There was no greater love shown in God sending an angel to rescue Peter than shown in God allowing James to die alone again. One was as loved as the others. Both were faithful to the Lord. One in dying and one in living. Some are called to live for Christ. Another is called to die for Christ. That's not our choice. You know, this is really radically different from any other religion. Most people choose religion for its benefits. What do I get out of it? Am I going to receive God's blessing? Is He going to bless me with health and wealth and money and power? You know that obedience, our obedience to the Lord is not a way to gain God's favor. It's our response to His unchanging love. Even in death, that's a lesson that this chapter is teaching us. The last thing that I want to share with you is why is James, known as John's brother. Let me explain first. You know that James was actually never mentioned alone in the New Testament. He was always introduced as someone's brother. Someone who's more famous. In this case, John. John the Apostle, right? You know who John the Apostle is. Not John the Baptist. Now this is the beloved disciple of Jesus who laid his rest his head on Jesus' bosom, chest. Now, I don't know if you had this experience, but did you ever grow up with a sibling where you are always known as so-and-so's brother? Is there anyone here? Quinn, you're known as what? Little sister, right? Did you like that? What's your predominant feeling when somebody introduces you as so-and-so's sister? Kind of a lesser, right? Cindy, what's your case? The same, right? Sister of so-and-so, brother of so-and-so. Now, I was the oldest, and I was always the one by whom my brothers were introduced. But when Sandy and I got married, because I was already serving in a church, and I was known as a pastor of that church, that when she came into into our marriage, she decided to join our church, and at our church, she was always known as Ted's wife, Pastor Ted's wife. One day I came home, she was really upset. She usually doesn't get upset, but when she gets upset, it's very, very obvious. There's no hiding. And she was really upset, and she was really struggling. So I said, honey, what's wrong? And she basically told me she was really upset that she's always known as Ted's wife. And she complained to me. Now, it's very natural for us to feel like that. You know, think about this. The guy just died for his faith. And then Luke describes James by his better known brother, John the Apostle. Again, what is God really teaching? If you remember, these two are the same brothers who were brought by their mother. And this mother actually brought two sons and approached Jesus. And do you remember the story where the mother asked, Jesus, can one of them sit at your right hand? Can the other one sit? Do you remember what Jesus said? Can they drink the cup I'm about to drink? Can they be baptized with the same baptism I am about to receive? What Jesus was saying, are they willing to suffer? Now again, we can go back and read that story, but you know, the point is this, that you know, these two were raised by probably a tiger mom. This overzealous, driven, highly accomplished mother who wanted their sons to take prominent position next to Jesus. And Jesus actually gave a very simple answer. In the kingdom of God, you have to be the less. You cannot try to grab onto your power, your fame, your status, your position. You know, these two actually had great ambition, great zeal and ambition to be great in the kingdom. But they lived actually two very different lives. James was one of the first ones that died. Do you remember what happened to John the Apostle, his brother? He lived the longest. He lived into his 90s. He's the one who gave us John, the Gospel of John, and the book of Revelation. He was the one who lives to see the vision into the future. And he gives us a book of Revelation about what's going to happen in the future. Now, again, the question is, did God love John more? I mean, John lived as a prisoner in a small island in prison. And that's where he penned this beautiful book called Revelation. What this passage is teaching us is this. It's talking about the vanity of our earthly thing. We all have a desire to be known for our own accomplishment, our own status, and our own achievement. You know, according to Jesus, they both actually drank the cup that Jesus drank. They were baptized with the same suffering. You know that all of us, we struggle with the temptation to look great in the eyes of the world. You know, for me, even as a pastor, you know, the greatest temptation is really to compare myself with others. Constantly trying to evaluate my own achievement, my own life, my own legacy. There are friends in my age, there are friends who are actually, you know, taking some real prominent position, even in the Christian church. They're writing books and their names are getting out there. And when we begin to compare ourselves and you know, our own achievement and our accomplishments, it becomes actually very, very destructive. Because it leads to jealousy and discouragement. You know, the things that we regard as significant, our achievement, our recognition, God is teaching us, these are actually quite insignificant. It really doesn't matter whether you're known as James or the brother of John. Probably they gave that name because his brother John was still alive. What's interesting is, there is literally no mention of James after this point. Not one. Even the records of James that we have in the Gospel, they're not really positive ones. The point is, who cares? You know, many Christians, we're so obsessed with our own image, how we're presented to the world, what kind of legacy I'm going to leave behind. Sometimes we take offenses when we don't get the credit that we deserve in this life. When my name was not mentioned, or I've done something wonderful, and nobody notices it. You know, James had a very uneventful and short, brief life. He wasn't famous at all. Nobody talks about James, and that's why you don't hear sermons about James, the 12th chapter of the book of Acts. This is not to say that God does not answer our prayer or He does not love us, He does not care for us. But here's what I want to really share with you, and this might be a little bit of a challenging statement, but you have to understand that at some point, you and I both, we will have to grow from just being the object of God's love all the time. Yes, He loves us. Yes, He cares for us. Yes, He'll take care of us. But at some point, you're going to have to really embrace that God also has a plan for each one of us. And that plan may not be what we want for ourselves. Again, this whole thing is really going back to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. He chooses whom He's going to spare. He's going to choose who's going to die for the kingdom of God. Who's going to live. I mean, you're going to see, even after this point, it's full of these kind of examples for how God was really at work in this early church, building His kingdom, spreading the gospel. Jesus is calling us simply to be faithful in whatever capacity, whatever positions He has placed us in, whatever church or whatever community that we're part of. He's simply asking us to be faithful. The rest is really up to Him. Whether you may feel like you've been overlooked, or maybe you've taken offenses because nobody really recognizes what you have done, you may never get to rise to a prominent position. You may never get to write a book or get to stand on a platform and talk as someone who's really important. That doesn't matter. What really matters is whether you're in the plan of God. In Matthew chapter 20, I'll end with this. Jesus teaches us at such an important standard, a different standard of greatness. Is those who serve, those who are willing to take the lower path, they're considered great. That's why Jesus said the last will be first, the first will be last. I hope this story will shift your thinking about your faith. Now we, as children of God, we have right to pray for God's blessing and favor. I'm not saying that when we get sick, we should not pray for them. But at some point in your journey, this is part of growing up. This is part of maturing. At some point, you're going to have to learn to submit your will to the greater will of God. To the sovereignty. Will you stand with me as we close our prayer together? I love the way we kind of walked around and share and encourage one another. Maybe this is how we can end today. If you can just gather with 3 or 4 people around you, just turn around and try to find somebody. Let's really pray for one another. Maybe some of you are going through a very difficult season of your life. You feel like you really cannot make any sense out of what you're experiencing. You're one of those people. You feel like you're not getting the credit for what you've done, or people don't recognize your contribution to this community. Maybe God has a different plan than what you really envision for yourself. Maybe it's not really lining up, and maybe some of you are frustrated. Some of you feel like, you know, you prayed into this, and maybe God is not opening the door for the things that you've been asking, you've been seeking. Maybe our prayer can change today. Maybe we can submit and surrender. Instead of asking God to do something that we want, maybe this is a time where we can say, God, will you take my life and I surrender my will to you. I want to submit to your sovereign grace, your goodness, your perfect will for my life and for this church. and I'm going to stay faithful. Maybe we can pray that over one another for our church that I'm closest to. Okay? Maybe if you haven't met the person, just introduce yourself and let's spend a few minutes really asking the Lord to shape our hearts today. Allow us to have the courage to submit our role to this. Do you even remember where we are in terms of our preaching? Because we have different series and different people speaking on different topics. Do you remember where we were? That's right, we're still in the book of Acts. So we're going to try to pick up the speed a little bit. And this is probably one of my favorite books in the whole Bible. But we come to chapter 12, and I'm just going to have you read first three verses. Let's do this together in one voice. Go ahead and start. I cannot really see it from here. Go ahead and 1, 2, 3.
It was about this time that Herod and Herodias, and some who loved the church, intended to persecute them. Either James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. When he saw the rest of them approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the festival of unleavened bread.
Now, if you've been around for a long time, I bet you've never heard a sermon on a passage, this passage that we just read. How many of you actually heard a sermon on this particular story? Nobody, right? It's a really strange passage. What I really want to focus on is verse 2. If you can just leave that second verse there. You know, we're going through this entire story of the book of Acts. In God's perspective, you know, we talked about how this book is really not about the Acts of the Apostles. It is actually about the Acts of the risen Lord Christ. And God is doing His work, continuing to do His work through the Holy Spirit. And this is actually the second record of Christian martyrs. Remember, we looked at it earlier in the beginning of the book. There is a person who actually died for his faith. Who was the first one to die? Stephen. So Stephen was the first one to be killed for believing in Jesus and being part of the church. And here, the second person dies, and his name is James. Now, it's very easy to miss when you read through the book of Acts, especially when you come to this part. You know, we usually kind of skim over the first three verses that we just read. There's a profound lesson that is actually given in this story, and I think this is one of those stories that literally changed my view of who God is. I wrestle with it, and there's a season in my life where I really ask the Lord, what is this about? What are you really trying to teach us, teach me? You know, there are actually quite strange things that are happening in this entire chapter. It's actually quite bizarre. Now, first thing that I want to point out is that in verse 2, it talks about how James was killed for his faith. But pay attention to how short it is. This is probably one of the shortest verses. It says James was killed. Who was this James? The brother of John. So the first question is, why so short about his death? And then the second question that I want to really raise up is, why did God do anything about his death? Why did he save him? Do you know who James was? Besides being the brother of John, do you know who this James was? He was one of the apostles, but not only any apostle, he was one of the three, the inner circle. Remember the three that were closest to Jesus? Peter, John, James. This is one of those three that Jesus loved. And how come Jesus did not save him? The third question that I want to raise is that, you know, there's this really interesting description. James is mentioned in this book. Everybody probably knew as one of the three. But here, the title of this, I guess, who he was, his identity was the brother of James. Why? The brother of John. Why is he introduced as the brother of John? Now, if you look at these three questions carefully, God is actually teaching us something very, very important for our Christian faith. In fact, you may not like what you hear today. This isn't my disclaimer. You know, when I prepare a message, sometimes I know that whether this is going to be something that people one of those messages that you may find it really difficult to embrace or even take away. We're going to look at this, but this really will change. If you really pay attention and if you ask the Lord to really speak to you, I think it'll change the way you think about your Christian faith. Now, I'm going to quickly go through these three questions that I raised. Why social? You know, when you go back to the beginning of the book, it talks about the death of Stephen. Do you remember? Almost two chapters were given. Luke records about Stephen's life, what kind of man he was, and then he writes two chapters about Stephen, the very first martyr. And then, here, it's not even half a sentence. Stephen was a deacon. Now, as I said, Stephen was not even an eyewitness. He was not even an apostle. He did not even spend time with Jesus when he was alive. Stephen probably was one of those distant disciples. And yet here, James dies, and there's really, literally no description of who this man was. There's no tribute. There's no honor given to James. Do you find that strange? What is happening here? For good reason, Herod actually chose his first sacrificial lamb to appease the Jewish religious leaders. So this was Herod's choice, and he actually finds James, because he was one of the three, and then he chooses to kill him just to satisfy the Jewish religious leaders. And there it is. Eight words given to his death. Eight words. James was killed, the brother of John. Are those eight words or more? I think there are about eight words. He killed James, John's brother, with the sword. No further description about his life. No sermons given. It doesn't tell us what happened afterwards. You know, most funerals that I attend, there's always a difference between a Christian funeral and funeral of non-believers. One of the hardest funerals that I had to do was a person who was never a believer, and I actually never knew the person, but somebody contacted our church, and they were just desperate. So the family asked me if I could do a funeral for them. And so when I went to meet with the family, you know, one of the things that they wanted me to do was to really honor this man's life. He told me the whole life story. And he asked me in my sermon or in my sharing that if I could really celebrate and honor his life. And then they asked me if I could just assure his eternal destiny. And again, I asked them, this is not a believing family. And yet, they asked me to honor this person. It was really hard for me to do, and I had to be really honest with them, and I ended up preaching the gospel with the family. But, you know, even in non-believing people, non-Christian people, they have this desire to celebrate and honor someone's life when they pass from this life to the next. Here, I find it absolutely bizarre and strange that the Bible would actually not give any further description about what kind of man James was. And his death was almost recorded as like just a daily event. What is God really teaching us? What is this passage really teaching us? This is a part that you may find it really difficult to embrace, but it's actually teaching us how small, how insignificant our bodily death is for Christians. To men, death is the ultimate reality, right? Everybody's afraid of dying. I'm afraid of death. When I think about losing my loved ones or even in my own life, it scares me to death when I think about death, right? We're all scared, but in God's perspective, in the light of eternity, our bodily death is a small thing. It's an insignificant thing. That's the only way to explain the shortness or the brevity of this passage. When death is viewed from the heights of eternity, it is a small thing. That's why Paul says, oh, where is your sting? Oh, death, where is your sting? Where's your victory parade? So that's what God is teaching us. It's the first reality that he's teaching us. You know that Jesus never actually made any special promise of security or protection for his followers. You may find this really shocking. But just because we're Christians, we're not immune to the kinds of trials or sufferings or even hardships that we're going to experience in this life. Instead, Jesus always warned his followers. He said, I send you like sheep among wolves. If you have difficulty believing this, according to tradition, all 12 of the apostles, you know that they were all martyred. They all died. Not one of them survived, except maybe the apostle John, the brother of James. James is the only one out of all 12. He's the only one who's even actually given a line or credit for dying. The rest of them, their names, their acts, their death are not even mentioned. So that's the first point. In God's perspective, in the scheme of the distant future that God holds for us, our bodily suffering and death is just actually a small thing. Number two, gets a little bit more difficult. How come Jesus did not save you? Why no miracle? We all believe in the power of prayer, right? Right? We talked about it last Sunday, right? We all believe in the power of prayer. We believe in the power of healing. We believe in God's promise. But here, it seems like God really did not answer, or God did not save James. You know what's really interesting is that when you read chapter 12, it's not just this story. Luke is very, very intentional in how he puts together the story. So, the first three verses talks about the death of James. And then you know what comes afterwards? Starting from verse 6. Anybody remember what comes in the second half of the chapter 12? Comes this incredible miracle of Peter being rescued. If you went to Sunday school, you learn about these stories, right? Now, Herod was very, very intentional. He not only killed James, but he also wanted to make sure that the church understood. He wanted to put living fear in the first generation of the believers. So he found Peter and he locked him up. He's in prison now. And do you know what happened to him? Do you remember the story? In the middle of the night, angel comes and he wakes Peter up. And the chains literally fall off his hand. That the guards are literally blinded, they cannot see anything. And the angel leads him out of prison and miraculously rescues him. It says that actually the prison doors, the cell doors, unlocked by itself. Is that a miracle or what? Would you like to experience a miracle like that? So my question is this. How come Peter was rescued in such a miraculous fashion? James was killed. How would you explain that? How come God did not stop the sword of this execution or miraculously release James from the prison cell? And I don't think it's coincidence, or I think Luke is actually very intentionally putting these two stories together. Some people will say that if you actually read on in chapter 12, the reason why Peter was rescued miraculously was because the believers, the disciples were gathered together, and what were they doing? It says that they were praying. Praying for what? Praying for the release of their brethren. How many of you really believe that James was killed because people did not pray for him, but Peter was rescued because people prayed? I've heard that argument before. How many of you honestly believe that that was the reason? I'm glad no hand is going up right now. If that's what you believe, that's religion. That's superstition. That's not the kind of God that we believe. Was Peter more loved? Didn't Jesus love Peter more than James? You know, we sometimes put the order in the way Jesus loved his disciples. Peter always comes first, or John. Peter. James was probably the last of the three. Is that why? Didn't Jesus love Peter more? What do you make of all this? Here's a truth that you and I really need to face and embrace. We cannot measure the love of God with what happens in this life. Just because you are struck with cancer doesn't mean that God does not love you. Just because some unfortunate thing happened, or just because God took away someone that you love dearly too soon, you cannot conclude that God does not love you more or less because of what happens in this life. You know that our welfare or our suffering is really not an indication of the measure of God's love for us. The Bible is actually very clear about that. In today's world, God's favor is often measured by our health, our wealth, our prosperity, whether we get that job that we want or the promotion that we want. We've been trained, we've been conditioned to think like that and practice our faith in that way. But that's not the story that we read in the book of Acts. You do not think like that. Why was Peter spared in this story and not James? Because God was not done with Peter. His purpose for Peter was not done. His job was not done. It was not an accident that James died and Peter lived. And it's not even because of the prayers of the disciples. There was no greater love shown in God sending an angel to rescue Peter than shown in God allowing James to die alone. One was as loved as the other. Both were faithful to the Lord. One in dying and one in living. Some are called to live for Christ. Another is called to die for Christ. That's not our choice. You know, this is really radically different from any other religion. Most people choose religion for its benefits. What do I get out of it? Am I going to receive God's blessing? Is He going to bless me with health and wealth and money and power? You know that obedience, our obedience to the Lord is not a way to gain God's favor. It's our response to His unchanging love. Even in death, that's a lesson that this chapter is teaching us. The last thing that I want to share with you is why is James, known as John's brother. Let me explain first. You know that James was actually never mentioned alone in the New Testament. He was always introduced as someone's brother. Someone who's more famous. In this case, John. John the Apostle, right? You know who John the Apostle is, not John the Baptist. Now this is the beloved disciple of Jesus who laid his rest his head on Jesus' bosom, chest. Now, I don't know if you had this experience, but did you ever grow up with a sibling where you are always known as so-and-so's brother? Is there anyone here? Quinn, you're known as what? Little sister, right? Did you like that? What's your predominant feeling when somebody introduces you as so-and-so's sister? Kind of a lesser, right? Cindy, what's your case? The same, right? Sister of so-and-so, brother of so-and-so. Now, I was the oldest, and I was always the one by whom my brothers were introduced. But when Sandy and I got married, because I was already serving in a church, and I was known as a pastor of that church, that when she came into into our marriage, she decided to join our church, and at our church, she was always known as Ted's wife, Pastor Ted's wife. One day I came home, she was really upset. I mean, she usually doesn't get upset, but when she gets upset, it's very, very obvious. There's no hiding. And she was really upset and she was really struggling. So I said, honey, what's wrong? And she basically told me she was really upset that she's always known as Ted's wife. And she complained to me. Now, it's very natural for us to feel like that. You know, think about this. The guy just died for his faith. And then, Luke describes James by his better known brother, John the Apostle. Again, what is God really teaching us? If you remember, these two are the same brothers who were brought by their mother. And this mother actually brought two sons and approached Jesus. And do you remember the story where the mother asked, Jesus, can one of them sit at your right hand? Can the other one sit? Do you remember what Jesus said? Can they drink the cup I'm about to drink? Can they be baptized with the same baptism I am about to receive? What Jesus was saying, are they willing to suffer? Now again, we can go back and read that story, but you know, the point is this, that you know, these two were raised by probably a tiger mom. This overzealous, driven, highly accomplished mother who wanted their sons to take prominent position next to Jesus. And Jesus actually gave a very simple answer. In the kingdom of God, you have to be the less. You cannot try to grab onto your power, your fame, your status, your position. You know, these two actually had great ambition, great zeal and ambition to be great in the kingdom of God. But they lived actually two very different lives. James was one of the first ones that died. You remember what happened to John the Apostle, his brother? He lived the longest. He lived into his 90s. He's the one who gave us John, the Gospel of John, and the book of Revelation. He was the one who lives to see the vision into the future, and he gives us a book of Revelation about what's going to happen in the future. Now, again, the question is, did God love John more? I mean, John lived as a prisoner in a small island in prison, and that's where he penned.